This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Dr. Squatch. When your personal care routine needs a refresh, Dr. Squatch is here to help. They have high-performing natural products with no harmful ingredients that'll have you looking and smelling your best. Like the Bay Rum Soap and Deodorant. It smells delightfully spicy. And right now, they have an amazing offer for new customers. Get 20% off your first purchase of any amount or a subscription order by going to drsquatch.com/Spotify or use the code Spotify at checkout.
Welcome to Training Unleashed, the show that will help you design and deliver training that's off the chain and will make a difference. Now, here's your host, Evan Hackel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition. And I'm actually super excited about this edition of Training Unleashed. Before we get started, I want to thank my sponsors, C-Suite TV and C-Suite Radio. Without you as sponsors, we wouldn't have a show. Today, I'm excited because we're going to get a point of view on something that I think is a very important topic from someone not in this country. And our guest today is Baha, and he is an expert on psychological safety. And, you know, that's a term that we don't hear that much, but I do think is a hugely important concept. So I'm going to just start with a simple softball question. Baha, what is psychological safety?
Yes, psychological safety is a work environment where employees feel safe to express their questions, concerns, ideas, and mistakes. By the way, it's a key aspect of high-performing teams.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, in some ways, it's a result of a company that executes diversity, equity, and inclusion in a successful way, because an end result is psychological safety. Would that be true, or do you want to expand on that?
Actually, psychological safety is the foundation. Once we have psychological safety, then we are more likely to create this diverse and inclusive work culture where people, employees have sense of belonging.
But in the United States, there's a lot of focus on DE&I. What is the relationship of psychological safety and DE&I?
Psychological safety is actually the foundation. Once we create a workplace of psychological safety, then we are more likely to have sense of belonging and inclusion. We can have diverse teams, but without psychological safety, it's really difficult to have an inclusive work culture. So psychological safety is the foundation to create inclusive work cultures.
So if I'm listening to this, and I think most of our listeners are kind of listening with the same kind of, okay, I get it, but what does that mean? So I'll ask the simple question, How does one create psychological safety in the workplace?
There are multiple ways to create it. So going back to your previous question, inclusive, diversity, inclusion, and equity, let's take inclusion. How can we create psychological safety and create inclusion in the workplace? One way to do it is to involve our employees in certain aspects of the work. I can give you one simple example. This is a real case. One organization, which is very traditional. In this organization, normally senior managers make decisions. Decisions are cascaded downwards. Employees at the bottom execute these decisions. This organization later realized the world is changing so fast, the way we work, it's in the future, it's not likely that we are going to thrive. We need to change the way we work. And the senior management said, instead of us making decisions, employees on the front line, they're closer to our customers. we as senior managers can give them tools, processes, tools, systems, technology, so that employees at the bottom, they are closer to the customer, they can make, in certain aspects of the work, their own decisions. This time, we can respond faster to the market, add value to our customers. And actually, this also makes employees feel more included and have sense of belonging. In a nutshell, to create this psychological safety concerning inclusion, the question is, in what aspects of the work can we allow our employees to make their decisions? This way, employees feel more included and they have a higher sense of belonging.
Well, you've said a lot, and I have to say, I am so aligned, totally aligned, because what I find is that there are two aspects that people have issues with. One is that they're never given clarity. They don't know. In fact, you know, if you asked most employees and you got really down to the heart of it, what I think you would hear is, I can make any decision I want just as long as it's the same decision that the manager would have made. As long as it is in line with the manager, they'd be very proud of my initiative as long as I made a decision they wanted. But if I made a decision they didn't agree with, no matter how small or trivial, I'm at risk. And I see this a lot, especially in customer service, when you deal with little issues that, you know, you're talking to people that are not empowered to do anything. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that a company hasn't done a good job defining what levels of authority people have at different sizes and roles in the company. How do you start?
Yeah, first of all, the first point is becoming aware. The question is, to what extent is the organization aware of this problem or this challenge? If you have awareness, let's say at the senior level, then the next question is, to what extent are we interested in empowering our employees? So awareness and then interest. Let's assume then the senior managers or decision makers are aware and they're interested in clarifying this, giving certain authority to employees. The third question is, how can we do this? So the knowledge, how to do this. It's about the way senior managers talk with employees weekly, one-on-ones, asking good questions, asking constructive questions, encouraging employees. Once employees bring ideas, to value them. So awareness, interest, knowledge, and then application. We do this in practice. And then the last point is to make it sustainable. How can we make this sustainable, continuing this effort? So the first step is always becoming aware of this and have the courage to start doing this in a constructive way, involving employees, asking them questions, getting their ideas, valuing them, guiding them. And it's a process, you know, especially if an organization is big, it will take time to have this embedded in different levels of management.
So in the United States, there's a company that's kind of legendary. I don't think we've heard much from them lately. So for a lot of our listeners, this might be a new story. But the company's called Nordstrom's. And you may have heard of Nordstrom's. I'm not sure, Bob. Have you heard of Nordstrom's before?
Nordstrom's.
It's a department store.
Ah, yes, yes, I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So the story goes, and I, to the best of my knowledge, believe this to be a true story, is a customer goes into Nordstrom's and returns a set of four tires. Now, never in the history of Nordstrom's have they ever sold tires, but the employee determines that it's better to accept the tires as a return than to upset the customer, because the customer is convinced they bought the tires there. Now, most people that I know would go, that is absurd. But the person that actually accepted the tires was sort of honored in Nordstrom's for their willingness to take risk, their willingness to do whatever it takes to satisfy the customer. And this story has been told in numerous books, numerous speeches, the amount of marketing. I mean, right now we're talking about Nordstrom's, and this story is probably 20 plus years old. Is incredible. But I'll just ask you this blunt question. Would you allow an employee of Nordstrom's, if you were the CEO of Nordstrom's, to accept tires and give someone a return on, maybe it was an in-store credit, a set of tires when they never purchased the tires from the business itself?
Yeah, now that you tell me this story, I remember reading it in one of the books. And the answer to your question, so it depends what the service level or organizations. The answer to your question, I would say yes. Here, there are a few points that you mentioned. First, employees are empowered to make certain decisions. These employees who are empowered later are even rewarded. It becomes a positive success story written in books. It's good for the publicity of the organization. It shows its attention and customer service. So this happens not only in the department store that you mentioned. I know that is, for example, in Ritz-Carlton Hotel, employees, they have some extra budget. I think $200, something like that. Once a week or once per month, they are expected to surprise any guest in the hotel. Starbucks, as far as I know, they do this as well. Surprise. I think once a month, an employee can give you a surprise. Maybe you get extra cookie. This is done. The employees are given the authority to make a decision on this, to surprise customers, to delight them, to achieve excellence in customer service. This is about psychological safety as well, in terms of giving them power, giving them space to make their own decision. And not only that, they are rewarded, encouraged to do this. And in a nutshell, the answer would be yes. And if our idea is to delight customers, surprise them, create a wonderful customer experience, why not? I think it's a wonderful experience. And not only that practice, and it also has to do with the company culture as well. Having the right systems, approaches, management styles to support this behavior and sustain it, like in the example you shared, or Ritz-Carlton or Starbucks.
Yeah, I have an amazing Ritz-Carlton story, but I'll quick share it because it's just too good a story. I was going to a trade show in Atlanta, and I wanted to stay at the Westin Hotel, which was booked. And I wanted to stay there because I had a whole bunch of stuff to bring in, and it was connected to the conference room. So I booked at the Ritz-Carlton, which was a block down the road. I showed up at the Ritz-Carlton at 7 o'clock at night, and the clerk says to me, "Mr. Hackle, we are oversold tonight, but we do have a room for you, but we're going to give you a choice. We have secured a room for you at the Westin." How they did it, I don't know, because that's where I went. "We're going to comp you that room at the Westin. You can stay there for free, because we hate it when people show up at 1 a.m. and there is literally no room in the inn. So if you would accept our kind offer to stay at the Westin, I would really appreciate it. And we're going to comp your room for you in exchange for that inconvenience." And they explained the whole reason. And I've been at hotels like at 2 a.m. and not had a room. So I wanted to go to the Westin. So I was really happy. So I moved to the Westin. And then a week later, I got a letter and a gift certificate for $250 to be spent at the Ritz-Carlton for being such an accommodating guest, which was amazing. So it was like, wow, they really handled it well. Now, conversely, I was at a Ralph Lauren outlet store, and I had bought a pair of Ralph Lauren jeans at Saks Fifth Avenue, and the Ralph Lauren outlet store across the street from me, and one of the belt, you know, the things that hold your belt in, the I don't know, loop, had busted off. So I walked over to the to the Ralph Lauren with my Ralph Lauren things. And I said, look, at, I know you're the Ralph Lauren company. I know I bought jeans that are Ralph Lauren, but I bought them at Saks Fifth Avenue. They're clearly defective. It's not the fault of Saks that these are broken jeans. I said, can you guys handle the repair? And they said, no. And I said, are you, you know, not able to, like you just have no system to? No, we can, you just buy them from us. And I said, oh, is there someone here I could talk to, like in management? I said, are you, I always say this to someone because it, you know, because it doesn't make any sense to drive someone nuts. I said, are you empowered to make this decision if I, you know, if you were so, you know, if I convinced you? Not that that's what you would do. And they go, no, we're not. And I said to them, well, what do I do? And they go, on the wall there is an 800 number. Now I'm in the store. And they go, call the 800 number. So I called the 800 number. And the person, the 800 number says, I work in the online department. I have nothing to do with the stores. So, I mean, talk about people with lack of empowerment. I felt bad for them. So anyhow, I love the topic and maybe we've diverged, but to me, one of the questions I would have if I was listening is, there must be limits, right? You're not going to allow a frontline employee to make a $1 million decision, right? That would be absurd to expect someone to make a $1 million decision who was a clerk at a Nordstrom's or at a Ralph Lauren shop. But at the same token, you know, you would think, you know, they could make $100 decision or $1,000 decision.
Need to improve your business results? Tortle's Rapid Curriculum Design Workshop might be just what you need. We partner with your business experts to identify knowledge gaps, determine training needs, and design a curriculum to help you achieve your business goals. We engage directly with the employees who have the most information to provide. The outcome of our Rapid Curriculum Design Workshop? A detailed blueprint with curriculum goals and strategies on how to implement the curriculum.
You don't need to say who the company is, unless you feel that they would like that. But, you know, what is an example of how companies set standards to allow people to define what their level of authority is?
I can share my own experience. I was one of the first employees of Facebook in Europe. I worked at Facebook from 2009 till 2013. At that time, the company was booming. Despite all the financial crisis, yeah. It was thriving. At that time, it had a very high level of psychological safety. And the Facebook's culture was based on certain values, such as be open, make impact at work. And the company really, the employees really embrace these values. Let's say you notice you're a frontline employee, you notice a user experience on the website. You, with the data, you need to gather the data, say, this is what I observed. I don't know, 5,000 users are affected by this problem X. This is a workflow. And then you come up with an idea. And immediately, cross-functional teams are formed. You need to include engineer, if it's related with customer care, one manager, legal team. Immediately, Facebook has tools. You just tag in the names. And then you point out the problem, the challenge. You lay out your solution. And then it's a teamwork. If it's seen as really a worthwhile problem, the company, the team starts working on it. So employees, regardless of their level in the organization, are encouraged, once they see issues, challenges, they're encouraged to come up with ideas based on data. And then different cross-functional teams are formed to solve it, to improve the user experience. This is a technology company. I know it can be different in different sectors as well, healthcare, construction, production, etc. And there are examples from other organizations as well, even more traditional ones, where once managers start listening to frontline employees, start taking into account their ideas, they really improve the user or customer experience and employees feel more valued and included as well.
So I'm hearing something that is a little different than what we said before, and I love it, because it's not just defining what they can and cannot do, but it's really taking the time to listen to them and hear what their ideas are, because then they feel valued. So they're valued because they're trusted to make a decision. They're valued because they're being heard. Is that a good representation of what you're talking about?
Exactly. I work with organizations around the globe, in Turkey, US, United Arab Emirates, Germany, Netherlands, different parts of the world. And regardless of the cultures, human beings, employees, we have this need to feel heard, to feel valued, to feel understood. And your comment really goes right into that.
So so right now our listeners are probably in two, maybe three camps. One camp is, hey, I feel good because we do a lot of that stuff. I maybe didn't think about it that way, but I can see we do it. Then the other camp is, and this is where the vast majority of our listeners are, we don't do this in this company well. And then there may be some people in the middle. So what advice would you give to somebody if they're in a company where they go, wow, and let's just say they're empowered, you know, meaning they're a member of you know, the management team and the training podcast, but and for everyone in training, training can play a huge role helping people define their level of responsibility, and training could also play a huge role in being a feedback mechanism within the organization. And it that would depend on the organization. Sometimes organizations have training as they do things to incorporate listening and things, and some organizations, the human resources department's doing it, and some organizations, communication. I'm not saying is going to do that all the time, but what advice would you give to a person who's sitting here saying, you know, Baha, what you're saying makes sense. How do I start? Where do I go? How do we make this culture shift?
Yeah. First of all, before I can share a general advice, and in the context of customer, before sharing the advice, I would ask them questions to understand what the real challenges are. Since we are doing this,
why don't we do this because this is fun. I'll play. We'll role play. You ask me the questions you would ask.
Okay.
And I will share with you from a fictionalized company.
Okay.
And the fictionalized company is a 20-year-old company, has recently made some mergers, and there's some confusion in the company about what each company does, what each role does, because not all the roles are exactly the same. And the company, you know, in the forming, storming, norming, performing is sort of in the storming phase. And I've come to you and I'd like some advice on how we can create psychological safety and clarity.
Okay. So the first question I would ask would be, regarding psychological safety, what are some behaviors that you see as areas of improvement? You said there is confusion, there is a merger, and it's not clear.
So I say that in wise company, so businesses, no one's gonna approving projects because they're that people know who to go to. There's a general fear that they're going to take.
Ivan, your voice was cutting off. I couldn't hear you completely. Maybe your internet connection.
That people. So here are the thing. People are afraid to make decisions.
Okay.
Decisions take a long time. People aren't sure who can make decisions, and people aren't sure whose job within the company. Because they're two different companies.
Okay. So employees are afraid to make decisions. Decision making take long time, and employees do not know who make decisions. Right?
Yes.
So starting with the last one, employees do not know who makes decisions. This is about clarity. How can we clarify it? Who is responsible for what? And who is responsible to give decisions? And regarding the first one, employees are afraid to make decisions. Can you give me an example? Why do you think employees are afraid to make decisions?
I think they're afraid to make decisions because they're afraid that they're not going to make the decision that their manager wants them to make. And because there is this merger, there's confusion. Are we doing the process the way we've always done it? Are we doing the process the way the other company did it? I'm not sure of the process. I'm not sure. I don't have certainty.
Yeah. I would ask, do you want me to ask you more questions, or I can go ahead and normally I would ask more questions and it would take more time. But for this,
we don't have that much more time. So why don't we?
For the sake of the podcast, the first point that I see here, it's about transparency. Transparency about decisions. Who does what? Who makes decisions? And then it's crucial in this case for the organization to be transparent, to have to communicate with employees regularly, openly, mentioning, you know, even the challenges the organization has in this merger. The first point is transparency. The second point is to give space to employees to express their ideas, concerns, and this can be a challenging time to organizations merging, and employees might feel overwhelmed. They might feel anxious. Maybe they're concerned about losing their job. I don't know. As an organization, we need to give this space to employees to speak up. We can do this in weekly meetings, value their ideas, listen to them, acknowledge them. Third, based on the ideas of employees, we can even include them to solve the challenges of the organization rather than managers making decisions and imposing them on employees. We can get employees' ideas collaboratively in certain ways, include them in improving the situation. Let's say there is not a clear process on decision-making on topic X, I don't know, X, Y, Z. Then we can, if the idea comes from an employee, maybe that employee, we can assign them to create the process to improve this. In a nutshell, be transparent, communicate. Second, give space to employees to express their ideas. We can do this through weekly one-on-ones. It can be done through weekly team meeting. It can be done through a monthly town hall where employees feel that their voices are heard. Third, include employees in solving these challenges. Listen to their ideas. Involve them in improving the situation. This way they would have the psychological safety to express their ideas and also the chance to be involved in improving it. Otherwise, if we as managers make decisions and try to push it downwards, then we have this resistance from employees. So psychological safety is that foundation for us to involve employees, listen to them, give them space to share their ideas, concerns, so that we can work together to improve it.
I love what I heard, and I believe in listening. First of all, I believe in everything, so I want to be clear. But the one thing that you said that I think is of great value, I have done myself. We've done a whiteboard meeting, which is an open meeting where employees come in and can pick any topic, and you know, just been very, very successful. But may talk a little bit about what an employee town hall would be like, because I suspect there are a lot of people listening thinking, I don't know if I want to do that because I'm afraid of what somebody might say. It's a different kind of psychological safety. It's the safety of the manager that wants to be protected from hearing anything that they don't like. And given this is a training podcast, I would say to everyone listening in a training department, be the change you want to see in the world, right? So, maybe the company isn't going to make a major initiative, but maybe your department is. How would the town hall structure work that would bring out the best result?
It depends on to what level the senior management is open to this idea and to what level the senior management understands and embraces the concept of psychological safety. There can be multiple ways to do it. One would be to do it through the town hall. I know we show the vulnerability there. I understand. The second option could be to do it in a smaller setting. So depending on the level of maturity of the organization concerning psychological safety, it can be done in a smaller setting as well. The main idea here is to get the ideas, concerns, meet with the other managers and try to find ways to respond to those concerns and involve employees. I can give you an example from my own experience at Facebook. Once a week, Mark Zuckerberg used to have weekly all hands. Any employee in the organization from California to London, Singapore, Dubai can join online, employees in California face-to-face, and any employee can ask any question directly to Mark Zuckerberg with ideas, and, concerns, fears. It seems like a simple exercise, simple activity. At the same time, it has a big effect on employees' sense of psychological safety in the organization. So in a nutshell, to make a long answer short, do it in a way which is fine for your organization, either opening to all employees once, or you can do it in smaller groups as well.
I love your ideas. I actually would enjoy more time, but we only have so much time. No one could listen to this and not say that this is refreshing, new, something people aren't talking about, and clearly highly valuable. Particularly because we know in the difficult market to keep employees, that having employees that enjoy working there, particularly with younger generations, people that don't feel valued are leaving in droves. So it's a very timely topic. Tell us about you, your company, who you work with, how people can reach you, et cetera.
Yes, I'm based in Germany, Berlin. And I'm founder of Solution Folder, which is a training and consulting company. Mainly I work with organizations who would like to provide the best learning experience for their employees, who are interested in the latest knowledge, who are ambitious, and who would like to improve their work culture. I work with organizations in the US as well, mainly Fortune 500 companies, and in different sectors, from banks to car companies, manufacturing, etc. And I have one website for those who are interested. You can check this website to get free resources on the topic of psychological safety. It is solutionfolder.com/free-resources.
Okay, we're going to have you say that one time. So people, if you go to trainingunleashed.net, you're going to see a description of all of this. So you can have the website right there. A lot of people, though, of course, are listening on Spotify, Apple, wherever this is being shown. So please repeat the website one more time.
Sure. Solution folder. It's together. solutionfolder.com/free-resources.
You know, I learned a long time ago when I was in getting my MBA that the most powerful marketing word ever was free. That people really like free. So I think it's fantastic you're making that available to everyone. Maybe just tell us a little bit about what those free resources are.
They're basically eight videos on psychological safety that you get one video per week. So 8 videos in 8 weeks. These are short videos, short actionable videos about different aspects of psychological safety. How can we implement, foster psychological safety in our workplace?
Cool. So as you know, and every listener knows, we always end, if you had one piece of advice to share with the audience, what would that one piece of advice be?
Concerning psychological safety, there is an interesting aspect. It's about dealing with mistakes. So we are human beings. We can make mistakes. We can learn from these mistakes, and we can improve. The main thing is not to repeat the same mistake.
I like it. Okay. Well, thank you for being a guest. I want to thank all of our listeners and all of our viewers and our sponsors, SweetSuite TV and SweetSuite Radio. Without you, we would not have a podcast. Everyone take care and have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Training Unleashed is brought to you by Tortle Training, specializing in e-learning and interactive online training solutions for corporate, government, nonprofit, and franchise organizations. Tortle makes effective training easier. Just go to tortle.net to gain access to real-world tools that can make a difference. That's tortle.net, T-O-R-T-A-L, tortle.net.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.